What about all the skeptics? We've got a lot who call and write this program, and they're actually angry, Professor. They come at it with a lot of anger and say the kind of thing that you're talking about right now and the other scientists are talking about. And I believe that, by the way, it's a very settled science. It's very real. But they get angry. There's a lot of anger attached to it, and they just don't believe it or don't want to believe it.
I think you put your finger on it right there. They don't want to believe it. You know, they're in denial about it because they'd rather not believe it. And I think if you scratch a lot of people who are skeptical of this science, it's not really the science that they doubt. They're not usually but particularly well-informed about it, but it's the consequences they fear. That is, if you're of a mind to think that you don't want the government interfering in your life, you don't want taxes on gasoline, you don't want to be told what kind of fuels you can use, you don't want the economy straitjacketed by constraints on how energy can be developed, then all those kinds of things are going to make you tend to want this problem to go away. And therefore, you start to approach the issue like a lawyer rather than a scientist. That is to say, you're making the best case you can for a point of view that you came into the room with. You're no longer just trying to find out how Mother Nature works. You're no longer trying to discover natural or physical truth. You're trying to buttress a position that you firmly believe in. I can respect people who have those kinds of political or ideological or economic convictions, but you have to take the science seriously whether you wish it weren't true or not. It's a little bit like catching a disease and being told by your doctor that there's a treatment you have to undergo. You may wish it weren't so, but your physician knows more about the disease than you do. There's a lot of medical science behind it. It's medical science, like climate science, is imperfect and still has things to learn, but it's good enough to be useful. And I think that's exactly where climate science is now. The IPCC is not policy-driven. It doesn't recommend policy. It simply assesses the science that's been done worldwide, published in the technical literature, and it assesses it in a way that is relevant to policy. So we're trying to make sure that we help these decisions that have to be taken worldwide in the near future to make sure that they're informed by the best solid science. It's not ideologically or politically driven at all. One has to believe that.
Let's say, let's take your analogy and say that we have been told by our doctor, you scientists, that we have a very serious situation, that we are in effect ill, and if you had to recommend a treatment, is it one that the economy can withstand, or do we kill the patient with the treatment?
This is my personal view, Art. The IPCC doesn't take policy positions, but my personal view, and I think many people who are knowledgeable about the science would agree with it, and keep in mind, I'm a climate scientist. I'm not an economist or a political scientist.
Sure.
But I think that a lot of the things that need doing are things you'd want to do anyway because they're beneficial in many ways. For example, the problem basically comes about because 80% of the world's energy is being generated by burning coal and oil and natural gas, the so-called fossil fuels. They're cheap, they're abundant, and they have powered the prosperity that the U.S. and many other countries enjoy.
That's right.
But there are ways to have alternate fuels, and there are ways to use energy conservation and energy efficiency to use less of that fuel. It's just as if you were to get a car exactly like your current car, but with twice as much gas mileage. Wouldn't you like that? It does help the climate, but it also puts money in your pocket, reduces dependence on foreign oil, helps the balance of payments issue, helps air pollution in your town. There's lots of reasons to do that. If you had a car, what's the downside of getting better gas mileage? There really isn't one. And I think there are a lot of that kind of low-hanging fruit out there that actually have negative costs. They're beneficial to the economy. I really believe that many of the things that need to be done for climate can get done. Technologically, the potential is huge. I think it's really a case of people taking this issue seriously enough, letting their governments know it's important to them not to leave a damaged planet to their children. Getting the government to declare these things a priority, that frees up all the inventiveness, all the creativity of corporations, smart engineers, to find a better way to make energy.
Professor, if we don't change, if we don't take the cure or whatever is involved, and if we continue as we currently are, and I don't mean just the U.S., but the rest of the world as well, and it becomes a worst-case scenario situation, how soon and how bad?
I think you're going to see serious problems by mid-century when many of us and our children are alive, and drastic problems towards the end of the century at best, if there's no change. That is to say, if we keep on growing human population, keep on generating energy. And you're quite right to have put your finger on the international dimension of this. This is in no way only a U.S. problem or only a first world wealthy developed countries problem. China is going to pass the United States within a year or so, much faster than had been anticipated just a few years ago, in terms of emitting carbon dioxide. Right now, the U.S. emits more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than any other single country. But China will pass us. It's opening a new coal-fired power plant, a dirty one, every few days. It has a population several times that of the United States. And right behind China are the other developing countries with large populations, the so-called BRIC, B-R-I-C countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And so the great growth is going to come in the developing world, whose people are hungry for a better standard of living, and where the temptation to develop and generate energy on fossil fuels like coal is irresistible.
I don't see how that's going to be stopped. Let me read you a UPI story dated May 10th, so it's very new. It says, a NASA study suggests global warming may raise average summer temperatures in the eastern U.S. by nearly 10 degrees Fahrenheit by the 2080s. National Aeronautics and Space Administration scientists determined eastern U.S. summer daily high temperatures that currently average in the low to mid-80s Fahrenheit will most likely soar into the low to mid-90s by the 2080s. But during seasons with infrequent rainfall, July and August daily temperatures could average between 100 and 110 degrees in cities like Chicago, Washington, and Atlanta.
That's not an implausible scenario. There's some fuzziness around all these kinds of predictions, of course. They can never be as accurate as you would like, just as your doctor can't tell you the date of the heart attack you'll have if you keep on living in a bad lifestyle. But it's that kind of scenario that's quite plausible. And you're right. The danger there, the impact on human health, for example, is drastic. It comes in the form of heat waves, which cause deaths. You know, there was a heat wave in this country last summer that I think helped to get people's attention. People are much more aware of this problem than they used to be, and I think it's because of weather events like that heat wave, whether or not they're caused by global warming. Katrina, which you cannot specifically ascribe to global warming as a definite cause, was an event like that. But in Europe, in 2003, there was an extraordinary, unprecedented heat wave that killed about 35,000 people. And a lot of research has been done on that. And I think it's a fair conclusion to say that a heat wave like that isn't impossible absent global warming, but the fact that global warming is going on did increase the odds of that heat wave. Maybe something that would have been a 1 in 100-year event becomes a 1 in 10-year event or something like that.